Hello, this is David Brim, and I'm the founder of Orlando Entrepreneurs. We are the hub for Orlando entrepreneurship, and our mission is to connect, cultivate, and celebrate our local entrepreneurs. We bring together our local entrepreneurial ecosystem to help impact our entrepreneurs, their companies, and our local economy. Learn more at OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org. Now over to Josh Wilson to get forward with our show.
All right, guys, good day and welcome to the Orlando Entrepreneurs Show. My name is Josh and I travel around Orlando talking to the entrepreneurs here, people who are building great businesses for themselves, maybe people that you've never heard of, or maybe big brands that you've seen all over the place. So I'm really excited to talk to a really awesome brand that's here in Orlando, and you might have seen them in retail stores all over the place. Today we're in the studio, an actual recording studio, with Matt and Jason, the founders of Rip It. Matt, Jason, welcome to the Orlando Entrepreneur Show.
Thanks. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah.
Hey, Josh. Thanks.
So I'm actually here with two brothers, Matt and Jason, who started this company. And I want to introduce each of them, hear their story, and see how two brothers can build a business like what they're doing and how they get along, being brothers, being business partners, and everything. So who wants to start off talking about who you are?
Okay, I'll start. So I'm Jason. So I'm the older of the two brothers. I'm technically 2 years, 9 months older. So Matt and I, you know, growing up, we were always very entrepreneurial minded. I don't think we quite understood what that meant at the time. You know, we'd have a word of what to call us, but you know, we were always, we always had some little side hustles going on, selling baseball cards, doing whatever. I think, you know, as we started getting older and went to college, so I went to college originally to be an engineer, decided I didn't want to do that, thought maybe about going to film school, ended up majoring in business, and Matthew went to Brown to play baseball, and then decided that he wasn't going to be pro, so he said, I'll just finish college, and then went to law school. And then I finished grad school and Matthew finished law school about the same time. And we both at that point figured we would, you know, work on Rip It as opposed to go out and getting a real job, as what we like to call it.
Got it. So Matt, talk to us. You went to school and you were thinking about becoming a professional baseball player. And you went to school for what? What did you decide to do?
Well, so I went to Brown originally. I told myself I was going to do computer science. And it's funny, within 6 months of being in college, I learned two things. Number one, I don't like computer science. And number two, there's no chance on God's green earth I'm going to play professional baseball because let's just say I was not a very good pitcher in college to begin with once I got up there, no matter how good I was in high school. So, you know, that realization came quick. And then it was, you know, hey, what should I do? And then I thought, well, you know, I like arguing. I like being political. So took the political science and the law route. Sounded good. TV shows about law were always fun. So I thought that'd be fun. I always like to say I got to law school. And in 3 years, what I learned was I didn't want to be a lawyer. Had to figure out something to do besides jumping into a law firm and going down that path. And I think sometimes timing's everything, you know, and it was a point where in both of our lives we were like, okay, we're going to get serious about something, so what should we get serious about? And we decided, you know, to do the irresponsible thing and not do anything we taught, anything we actually taught ourselves in college to do. We just do something totally else, totally different, but hey, it worked out, you know.
Awesome. So you guys, out of school, kind of graduated around the same time, and you decided to start a company. So Jason, what is Rip It?
So Rip It was, so let me give you just a little bit of background here. So Rip It was, so while we were in college, Rip It was created basically almost by accident. So our younger sister played softball. She broke her nose while she was playing, and she needed a mask that she could wear when she was hitting. And they wanted to buy one, her and my dad, and they were terrible. You just couldn't see out of them. So our dad is an engineer, so he actually was in the garage, welded one together, and put one on her helmet. And then all the other parents were like, oh, can you make one for our daughter? And that was kind of like when I was home one summer for college. It was like, hey, you know, why don't we put a website up and see if we can sell a few of these here and there? This was back when, you know, the web server was literally sitting on the desk in the office, you know what I mean? So it was definitely way, way back. There wasn't like Shopify or anything like that going on. You know, you actually had to build the thing. So we put some stuff up and we started selling a few websites, and it was kind of like a hobby, I'd say. While Matthew and I were still in college, you know, we were kind of working on it, but kind of, you know, doing college stuff like that. So when we both graduated and both decided to go full speed into it, that's when we said, okay, let's see, can we turn this company that's really right now a single product company, can we turn that into a brand that's selling, you know, multiple products within, at that time it was the baseball and softball market. So we were both baseball and softball. And we kept growing in baseball, softball market, and we were known really well in softball as a protective company. And we're known really, really well in baseball as a bat company. And then as we kept growing, you know, I forget how this came up, but we decided to look at both baseball and softball and said, are we getting our best return on investment on these things, right? So like, we're spending a ton of time trying to grow baseball, going up against these major brands who have been entrenched, you know, in the baseball industry for 30, 40, sometimes 100 years. And then over here, there's softball, where it's like, there were no leaders in the industry. After we did some analysis, we basically dropped baseball and decided to focus 100% on softball. And at the time, that was kind of like, in hindsight, it was a crazy move, because baseball was like a little more than a third of our revenue. So we just kind of overnight said, yeah, that third of revenue, we're just going to not worry about that anymore. We're going to go focus over here. But it was the right call, because, you know, what we found was, and it's kind of what we're built Rip It into now, is, as we dove into it, we found that, you know, women's sports in general are really underserviced relative to boys. And, you know, while for baseball it was like you could find tons of equipment you needed, there's 400 different bats, there's all these gloves, there's all this stuff. When it came to girls, it was typically like, well, we'll take the boys thing and we'll make it pink and we'll call it for girls. And what we found was there was this whole community, at least in softball, where they were just like wanting a brand to make things for them. Wanting a brand that make things for the sport they played. Because again, like baseball and softball, while it's similar, it's different sports, right? So these girls were really just looking for a brand that they could call their own. And that was probably about 3 years ago now, where we said like, okay, we're gonna really focus on this market and really make a brand these girls can really call their own.
Nice. Now, Matt, when he was telling the story about having to switch, you know, one third of your revenue goes, you know, towards baseball and boys, you know, driven sport. When he mentioned, when Jason was talking about, you know, dropping one third of your revenue almost overnight, I saw you chuckle a little bit. Like, how did that decision come to impact to say we are going to serve softball players?
You know, I kind of chuckle about it. It's funny because I was just talking about this the other day as well to somebody else. But you know, I think one thing that's, it's probably done us harm, but probably also served us well in areas. And I think in this case, it served us well. Was, you know, while Jason and I may take time sometimes to decide like what direction we're heading in or where we need to go, when we really feel convicted about something, we just barrel forward, like regardless of the consequences. You know, so it's funny in the sense that, you know, probably. People might say more responsible and more rational companies would have sat down and thought, well, this is a third of our revenue. We probably shouldn't do that. Let's think of some other thing. You know, we were pretty much like, yeah, we should get out of baseball. Yeah, let's just drop it. And, you know, like overnight, we were just like, we're out of that market. We're out of baseball. So, you know, it was, it was about as crazy as like two college educated kids deciding to do something that had nothing to do with their education. So,
yeah. So what year was this that you decided to go full softball and make the one third cut?
Was it 2015? Maybe? Yeah. About 2015.
Okay. Now, am I allowed to ask, like, one third of revenue? What kind of revenues were you doing in 2015 where you're saying, okay, we're going to give up X amount? Am I allowed to ask you guys that question?
Yeah, sure.
So what kind of financial impact did that have at that point? Because that's a big decision.
Yeah. So, I mean, from a revenue standpoint, I mean, it was 2 to 3 million in revenue that just kind of we pulled the plug on.
You guys made a decision. So, you were like 2 to 3 million. Yep, let's cut it.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny, right? Because I think what Matthew's trying to say is, you know, it wasn't just like one day we woke up and said, hey, let's stop doing this. You know, it was kind of like this idea of, you know, I think a lot of times people know the right decision to make,
yeah,
and they don't necessarily make it because they're worried or they're afraid of what might happen if they make that decision. But really when you sit back and you take like a 30,000 foot view of it, sometimes it's really easy to know the correct decision. And while in the short term, you know, we had to figure out ways to make up that revenue, in the long term, the focus that it created, the you know, just the customers that come up to us now and are just so thankful that there's a brand for them. In hindsight, it 100% was the right move, and you know, was definitely something we should do. And it's just, I think that's one of the things that we consistently do. It's like, if we do see something that doesn't seem to be right, even if it's been done that way in the industry for, I don't know, 20, 30, 40 years, if we're like, why, this doesn't make sense, we just do something else. Yeah. So we're very data driven too, right? So we like to look at the data, we like to look at the financials and make decisions through that lens.
Well, I think, walking around, I'm in your headquarters now, and you guys have an incredible brand, looks like an incredible culture, and you guys are in retail stores, and you guys have really carved out a niche. So it looks like you guys really did make the right decision. So this is a good, you know, maybe a good instructional time where you can talk to us about how can you trust your gut instinct, because you guys knew that for a while, and then one day you said, okay, this is the decision. So what advice do you have for entrepreneurs out there who have this gut instinct and they think that this is the direction I should go, taking that leap to say this is what we're doing? What do you think?
Yeah, so I think the best advice I can say, like taking the financial side aside, right? So like, obviously you really shouldn't make decisions that are going to bankrupt you like in 6 months, you know, but if you're making decisions, you know, understanding that you have, you know, the business makes sense, you can still be feasible. Putting that aside, I think anytime you can make decisions where you reduce complexity or increase focus on the thing that matters most. So like, again, I get back to baseball is like 10 times bigger than the softball market, but at the same time, like, everyone's fighting over that thing, right? So, and no one's really focused over here. So we were able to say, okay, let's stop playing over here and let's focus 100% of our attention over here. So I really think it's about, you know, being honest with yourself and then saying, okay, when I make this decision, making sure that you now focus on the right thing and not just replace it with some other shiny thing, you know? Because we could have said, well, we'll stop doing baseball, but we'll start doing, I don't know, soccer, you know? And that would have been equally as bad, you know, as continuing to do baseball and not focusing on the one thing that was really, really important.
Sure.
Well, and I think too, you know, besides that, you know, no matter what direction you choose to take, you know, what you learn as an entrepreneur, like, there's always a grind, right? It doesn't matter, like it doesn't get easier, right? You know, this idea that like, well, if you've been in business for 10 years, then you've made it. Well, no, like when you get to 10 years, like there's a whole new set of problems and a whole new set, you know, or you hit that next revenue plateau, like it doesn't get easier, it gets more complex. There's things you haven't learned that you have to learn now. There's complexity every step of the way. And so, you know, when you're grinding and you're constantly trying to grow your business and you're hitting these obstacles, it makes it so much easier to kind of continue to push through when you're doing something where there's a mission that you believe in, you know? And I think that was part of what made the decision easy, you know? Baseball, it was always, well, yes, we should be in baseball. It's 10 times bigger, right? So it was very much like almost a, it was a numbers-driven decision. It was like, well, there's just so much more money there. There's so much more players there, right? But then when we look at softball, it's like, you know, this, there's a mission to believe in, right? There's these underserved girls who are really being empowered in the sport, and we can help to support the empowerment of these girls and to become like successful women and leaders in their community. So, you know, being able to wake up and say you're doing that, not, you know, I'm trying to sell more bats to this giant market, like that gets you up in the morning, that gets you excited.
Yeah, it sounds very purpose and mission driven. So Matt, let me ask you a question. Where were you when you got the call that your sister got hit in the face with a softball? Where were you when that happened, and what was going through your mind?
I was in college, so I was pretty far removed, way up in Providence, Rhode Island. But you know what's funny? We've always been a sports family, you know, our sister, even though she's a girl, right? She grew up in a rough and tumble household, right? So this idea like, oh, she broke her nose, right? It was just like, oh, all right, she'll power through it. You know, she was tough, right? She was like a real tough girl. And what's really funny about that is like, it wasn't, you know, her saying, I broke my nose, I better sit out. It was literally like, I broke my nose. How do I find something to put on my helmet to cover my face so I don't miss tomorrow's game while I have a broken nose? You know, so like, it was really cool, right? Because our sister, and it kind of tying back to the other stuff, like, our sister has lived this like empowerment phase, right? She played softball her whole life, and she is, you know, successful and driven, and you know, so it's weird, you know. At the same time, you know, it's your little sister, and she broke her nose, but at the same time, you know, it's like, oh, she's a fighter. She's probably trying to figure out how to get back on the field, you know.
Yeah. So she got hit in the face with a ball, broke her nose, and the thought that was going through her head was, how do I get back into the game? The coaches might not let me play, so I need to find a solution. You guys looked for solutions. Like, Jason, what you mentioned that you looked for solutions and there was nothing really out there.
Yeah, so again, like, this is going way, way back, right? So at the time, you know, if you wanted a face mask for your helmet, there was just baseball, right? So you can imagine baseball is so much smaller than a softball, right? So the masks were like super, super small, super thin, you know, so a baseball couldn't fit through it. And it didn't really make sense from a softball standpoint, because you can make the bars much wider, you can make the vision much better, you know, if you design for softball. And that was kind of like the initial thing where, you know, it was kind of the eye-opening experience where it was like, wow, you know, you know, we take a lot of things for granted, but when you walk into a store as a baseball player and you see every single product is baseball, right? Then you would walk in as a softball player and you just have to buy the baseball products, right? It's a very, until you really like think about it and wrap your head around it, that's like a really bad experience. You know, just from a customer standpoint, from a, you know, just from a personal standpoint, like, man, I'm playing this sport and no one gets me. So that's really what it was like before, was just like baseball was, it was everything baseball. And that's when it was like, well, geez, we'll just design something that's for softball. And that's really, I mean, when I think the catalyst that got us started, which really got us like through the door at some of these retailers, which, I mean, to be honest, we had no business like doing any of this stuff. I mean, like, again, we're going up against brands that have been around for like 100 years, and like somehow we're getting into these retailers and taking shelf space and all this stuff. And it really came down to one thing. Like, our first product said softball face mask. And there's a certain number of players walking in or parents walking in saying, hey, where's your softball face masks? We have this one right here. There's maybe a wall of baseball face masks, right? But there's only one softball face mask. Now, these might be baseball slash softball, but there's only one softball, right? So there's this idea, and we kind of stumbled upon this, and this is one of the things, you know, when we were thinking about baseball and exiting bats and all this stuff, this was kind of the stuff that was going through our head. Like, you know, like, we are, when we make a product, it's a lot of times the only softball product. So we walk in the store, where's your softball helmet? Oh, it's there. Where's your softball fielder's mask? Oh, it's there, you know? So, and again, like, even now, like, you'd think now, like, people are catching on to this stuff, but still, like, there's still so much opportunity. Like, you know, Matthew did a good job going to, you know, we had our sales meetings with the big box stores like Dick's and Academy. And one of the things we like to do with them is we don't really like to treat them like sales meetings. We like to go there and we like to be partnered with them, right? We need to say, hey, this is a softball customer. This is how you guys can service them better. And one of the things that they did is they did this study of, like, if you're a normal softball player, mom or dad, walking in, and you're trying to buy all the things for softball, right, where do you go? And they drew a map of the store, of the zigzag and the up and down the aisles and this and that. And one of the things that was really telling is, like, you know, let's say I'm a dad and my daughter's playing softball for the first time and she needs socks. I walk in, where are your softball socks? Well, we got baseball socks over there. They all say baseball. It's not a single pair of socks that says softball. Got all sports socks, but again, not softball socks, right? So one of the products we're launching this year is, you know, silly as it sounds, are softball socks, right? So we identified the biggest pain points softball players had with their socks. We fixed those, and now it's branded as softball socks. So again, people walk into the store, where's your softball socks? Oh, we have this one right here. You know, so it really is that simple, I think, with businesses, to just like really identify who your core customer is. And instead of like trying to really, really expand out, really niche down to that core customer and just nail it for them every time.
Now that That seems counterintuitive, saying no to business, right? Or saying no to opportunity, but saying a bigger yes to that one specific opportunity. So Matt, from that first face mask that you and your family built in that garage, welded together and slapped it on a mask to protect your family, to protect your sister. From there, talk to us about the journey of additional products and how the heck did you get in these big retail stores?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's funny. People ask this all the time, and when you look back, it's kind of funny. You think to yourself, like, if anyone would have told us this was hard, like I just think we didn't even think that it was supposed to be hard. Like, we just did it, and it just happened, you know? And part of it was luck, and again, getting back to Jason's point, part of it was, in the early stages, just unknowingly approaching a niche market that no one was serving because we were involved in that market because of our sister, right? And so, you know, as we started to develop more products, you know, we started to lean on initially salespeople from the industry, right? So we brought in a couple sales reps who had been in the industry for a while. So they knew the buyers, they knew the important people, right? And that was probably the first time we, again, you know, this is thinking back, like, we're not business people yet, right? So we're not thinking like a business person. It was probably the first time in the business where we got smart and we decided there were probably people out there who knew how to do this better than we did, and we outsourced that work to somebody else. So we brought in a couple really experienced salespeople who, you know, at least knew how to get the product in front of the right people. And you know, I think at that point the product, you know, getting back to what Jason, you know, the product just kind of spoke to itself, you know, and back then it was softball. You know, it's a little better now. Some companies are starting to realize that softball is a sport they should pay attention to, but back then it was just so unique. It was just so, like, completely, like, no pun intended, like, from out of left field, right? For someone to walk in and be like, here's a softball product, you know, that it took a lot of these stores by surprise. You know, at least to the point where you know, they were intrigued maybe enough to say, okay, yeah, all right, we'll try some. You know, we'll give you a test. We'll put it in, you know, we'll put it in 20 doors and we'll see what happens, you know. You know, fortunately for us, you know, the 20-door test was successful and, you know, became a 100-door test, and then it became a 300-door test and sort of like that, you know. So, you know, kind of come a full circle to your question. You know, I think a lot of where we had success from a growth standpoint is understanding that the product has to prove itself in the market. Not trying to push too hard, but you know, when you do get that foot in the door at that major opportunity like Dick's or Academy, it's, you know, just get your opportunity to prove yourself. You know, get those 10 doors. Just convince them to, you know, let your product sit on a shelf somewhere and prove its validity to them. Because once they see the numbers, right, if you make a good product and it sells, they come back. You know what I mean? And I think that's probably one of the lessons we learned back then was, you know, I think, what do they say? Like, act like a drug dealer, right? Give them a taste, right? And if it's good, they'll come back, right? So this idea of, you know, if you make a really good product, just don't be afraid to let people test it, right? Just, like, push it out to people and say, no, just try. You know, you'll see it'll work. And you know, it takes a little more time, right? But over time, it snowballs, right? So
you made the face mask. What was product number two? What was product number three? Like, how did you guys come up with other ideas for this?
So the first product was the face mask, and what really made it appealing to retailers, right? Because again, like, if we had built the company the right way, right, we would have built a website, we would have built a, you know, like, a really strong direct-to-consumer following, then we would have got some calls from some people because, hey, people are buying this stuff off your website, I want to put it in my store. But somehow we went the other way. And I think what allowed us to do that was the original product, the face mask, was designed to fit, like, almost every helmet out there. So from a retailer standpoint, I can stock one face mask for all my helmets as opposed to stocking, like, eight face masks for the eight different helmets. So from a retailer's perspective, that was, like, really, really attractive for them. So that was kind of, like Matthew said, kind of opened the doors for us there. And then we started seeing, like, some of the girls wanting to wear face protection in the field. Because, you know, softball is a much more compact sport than baseball. It's a lot faster game. So, like, the reaction times are a lot quicker. And you have to be a lot quicker in softball you know, was hit right at you when you're really, really close to the ball. So we designed a fielder's mask that a lot of times pitchers and third base and first base would wear. So we're still like heavy into that safety aspect of the game. And then the third product we released was a helmet with a face mask attached to it. And basically, you know, one of the things that we're always trying to do too is just looking at the customer experience. And, you know, we got to the point where we're like, hey, you know, people are buying our face masks and just putting on any helmet because they really just want the face mask. And we just didn't like the idea of, you know, like people having to get a screwdriver out, screw a face mask on, put this on. So we said, how do we build a helmet with a face mask already attached on it? And how can we improve the product? Because now we're also doing the helmet, right? So how do we make this an all-in-one product that now people can just buy off the shelf and use it? And that was the first time we designed a helmet. And that turned out to be really, really quickly one of our most popular products.
Wow. So when you guys are now building, you know, headgear, right? So a full helmet with a mask. How do you test something like that? Like, you guys don't sit there and put mask on as brothers and throw baseballs at each other or softballs at each other, do you?
No. So I can tell you how we did it when we were kind of like bootstrapping, if you will.
Yeah.
So we had growing up, we actually had a batting cage in the backyard because I played baseball, Matthew played baseball, and our sister played softball. So when we first started, I mean, we would literally do our tests with a head, and we'd just fire a ball from the pitching machine in and just see what happened.
A head? Your brother's head?
No, yeah, no. Like a mannequin. No.
Kids down the street. Hey, yeah. Guys, come check this out.
Yeah, hey, come try this out. This is fun. No, it was like a mannequin head, and we do that. And then as we started growing, right, because this is just like we had, again, like starting a business from scratch, never selling anything like in retail environment. Like we were way over heads. We just didn't know it. You know, so we had to figure out ways to test, right? But then as we kept going, we started finding out that there are actual standards. So there's actually labs out there that you send this stuff to. It's kind of the same thing. They put the helmet on a mannequin, they fire it.
They just charge you a lot of money for it.
They charge you a lot more money and they give you some test results. But I mean, what's interesting is like, we, again, like talking about the customer experience, we always recognize, cause you know, we were putting this on our sister, you know, so it had to be safe, you know, from our perspective. So we always took that, even though we were doing it in the backyard, you know, through the pitching machine, I want to say once we went to the legitimate test, there was no design change needed. Like, we still passed fine. Yeah, so it was just, you know, testing however we needed to test and then realizing, oh, there is a test, and then going out and doing that.
Yeah. So Matt, you guys made the decision, let's serve softball players, right? So you have two brothers running a company that's primarily designed for serving females. How in the world did you guys really learn about your customer and what kind of design differences? I mean, there's a lot of differences with boys and girls that we don't have to get, you know, talk about on the show, anatomy lessons, but like, what, like, how in the world did you guys start to really understand the differences? Because I'm sure that opened up a lot of questions and opportunity to serve your client better, because like you said in the past, it was, oh, you want softball stuff? Buy the baseball gear that, and we'll paint it pink, right? So talk to us about that journey, Matt, where you started to build more products for females.
Sure.
And you had to learn about what females needed.
Sure. Yeah, you know, and I think probably the journey started with what might have been our biggest failure, right? So that might be a best place to start. Sort of what was our last baseball project, we'll call it, is, you know, we got it in our heads that we were going to build a smart bat, right? So sensors in the knob of the bat that would measure your swing and it would measure your quality of contact and all this really fancy stuff that sounded, you know, sounded really cool and you know, being kind of like nerdy as well, you know, was like this cool idea. And we spent a good chunk of money building this smart bat, got it all the way to the point where, you know, we were ready to go to market, and then hit the harsh reality that nobody wanted it. Like, it was cool, but when it was like, do you want it? No, I've got a hitting coach, I don't need it, you know. And I think that was the big moment where we stopped and we said, you know, there's got to be a better way to do this. Like, there has to be a better way for us to design products, develop products that really meet the customer's needs. And we were fortunate to find, you know, a couple of people who work for us now were consultants, and we found them, and they taught a sort of framework of co-creation with our customers, right? Where we go out and really have this deep empathy and deep understanding of our customer, and then constantly going back to our customer to validate that the things we're doing and the products we're developing are really solving their needs, which is a pretty stark contrast, right? So Jason always likes to say, you know, before it was a bunch of middle-aged, mostly guys, some girls in a room trying to decide like what a 12-year-old girl wants, right? Which is a recipe for disaster. Whereas, you know, we've now sort of transitioned this methodology of, you know, we go and we talk to, I think our director of product development says that like every product that launches, we've now had over 600 interviews with the player that product is designed for before it hits the market. So like just really deeply connecting with our customer base and making sure that, you know, we're not designing something that sounds good to us. We're designing something because we've talked to enough of them that we've identified their real pains, and then we've worked with them to solve them and kind of continue to work with them until we finally hand them something and go, oh my gosh, yes, this is exactly what I've needed. Like, here's my money, let's do it. So you know, a really big shift in like how we go about approaching the customer and about how we develop our products.
Yeah, that's great. So talk to us about the products that you guys have now, right? So you guys have a full line. I walked through your headquarters. I mean, incredible amount of things. So give a high level, you know, idea of what you guys provide for softball players.
Yeah, so last year we kind of set the goal of the company to fill the mannequin. And what we meant by that was we were getting ready to get into apparel for the first time. So up until now, we were primarily a hard goods company. So we had helmets, we had fielder's masks, we had some backpacks, but nothing on the apparel side. And really, you know, to get to the next revenue level that we're shooting for, we really have to start playing in that apparel space. So we set out to fill the mannequin, and the team just basically started looking at, okay, what products do we need to offer to retailers and to these players so we can fill a mannequin? Obviously you need a shirt, you need pants, you need a belt, you need socks. A lot of girls use headbands, so we have headbands now. So we've kind of got all of those products now to a place where, you know, we can get those into retail stores. So it was pretty cool to set this vision of like, hey, let's fill a mannequin, and now we've got a mannequin that we can actually fill. And then down the road from now, I mean, we're still looking at other items too, where it's like, you know, softball bats, trying to think. Oh, we also, I forget, sliders. We're also making sliders this year, which is a new thing. That's what girls wear underneath their softball pants, so when they slide, it doesn't give raspberries and stuff like that. But we basically set out to fill the mannequin, and that's what we did. And from a product development standpoint, moving forward over the next 3 years, our goal is to basically two goals. One is if you go out to a softball field on a Saturday, you look in the dugout, you look on the field, there's Rip It product. That's number one, right? So it's really easy, right? I can go out to a field this Saturday where games are getting played. I can start counting the product. Okay, we're 5% of the product, right? That's not acceptable. We need to keep building up the product, keep selling out the product so we can get to that level where like you walk in there and go, okay, yeah, there's Rip It stuff all over here. And then the second goal is from a retail standpoint, like if we have a retailer who has a softball dedicated space, we own that space, right? Meaning like we're the anchor brand in that retailer for softball. So those are kind of the two directives that we have moving forward for the next 3 years. And all of our product development is going to be centered around observing what our players need, and then also figuring out from a channel fit what works best in the retailer, and then making out those products.
Oh, that's good. So out of all the things that you guys have made, how long have you guys been building softball products, including the mask that you guys welded in the garage?
Full-time, what, 2006?
Yep.
Yeah, full-time about 2006.
So as of this recording, it's 2018. So in 12 years of building, you know, softball products, what is the biggest, like, aha that you guys have, like, seen in terms of being a product company in retail spaces? Like, what was one of the things that you're like, I wish I could go back to 2006 and tell my younger self this?
How long is this podcast?
We might have to do like phase two, phase three lessons.
Whole series on this.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if I could just put it like as broad as possible, it's, You know, it's really important, I think, to set that, you know, that vision of where you want the company to be in 5 to 10 years, and then kind of like what do you need to accomplish this year, and then breaking that 1 year down into what needs to happen the next 90 days. You know, like, this is something that I still don't think we're great at. We've gotten a lot better at it, but, you know, we're really good at setting the ambitious goals, but then when you start getting down in that strategic planning down that 90-day level, I really think that's like the challenge. And if I go back to 2006, I would say work really hard to, you know, work on that strategic plan at the 90-day level as opposed to thinking 1 or 2 or 3 years out.
Yeah. Matt?
That was a really good answer.
Right? Okay, so
right? Stole my thunder. I think if I could go back and, you know, if I'm thinking probably more on the sales side of this, because I tend to be more sales focused in what we do. Going back and just sort of saying to myself, spend less time talking, more time understanding, right? In sales, you tend to want to, you know, get in front of people and just rattle on about how incredible whatever you have is and why they need it. And, you know, probably about 3 years ago is when we took this dynamic shift to, you know, walking into a sales environment and asking questions, not making statements, you know. What do you need? What are your pains? How can we better serve your store? How can we better serve your customer? And making sure that, you know, what we brought to the table from a product and a service standpoint met those needs, right? Because it gets infinitely easier to sell a product to a customer or a retailer when you really understand what they need. And when you make that offer, it's meeting all those needs, you know? And prior to that, we went and we just rattled off, like, the product might have been great, but we weren't paying attention to like what they really wanted. So, you know, we had a lot of misses.
Yeah. So let's talk about brothers and business partners, right? So Matt, you guys are brothers and business partners in this business. Talk to us about like, what does that look like in terms of, because I mean, I have a brother, I have siblings, so I grew up and we would duke it out, right? We would go in the front yard with boxing gloves. And talk to us about what it looks like being a business partner with your brother.
I mean, that relationship has certainly evolved as well, I would say, over the period. I mean, you know, if you were to come in and asked any of the employees who worked here, you know, what was the dynamic between Jason and Matthew, you know, 4, 5, 6 or more years ago, you know, they probably would have said, hey, generally they agree on the same thing, but when they disagree, like, you could leave the room, probably come back 3 hours later, and, you know, they'll still be going at it, you know, like any brother, you know, we the emotions would get the best of us, and we really duke it out. You know, like anything, I think, we've evolved, you know, and we've always had a great relationship, which has made it easy, you know, brothers or family or siblings in general can duke it out, and then 2 minutes later, you know, be hanging out like nothing actually happened, right? So that's always been, you know, us. And you know, I think we've kind of the last couple of years reached a point where, you know, we really evolved and we really we're very close, but we're also very aligned, right? And I think a lot of that also ties back to the mission. You know, before we would disagree, and a lot of it was disagreements on, you know, where are we going, what are we doing, you know? And now that we have this kind of singular focus, it's very easy for us, you know, to get over the disagreements or to come to agreement on things. Yeah, I mean, in the end, I think it's a real asset to have a brother as a business partner as opposed to, you know, a non-family member. Now, and I can't speak for it because that's all I've ever had, but you know, I wouldn't have it any other way myself.
So, Jason, you're the older brother. What's your perspective on this?
Yeah, so, you know, it's funny. I had someone ask me this question a couple weeks ago, and I think the way I answered it, which I liked, is what's really great about, you know, being in business with someone who you know so well, right? I mean, it's really hard to find someone you know better than a sibling you've grown up your whole life with. And it kind of lets you have faster conversations, if that makes sense. Because, like, I don't have to worry about him thinking I'm a jerk. I don't have to worry about him saying, oh, that idiot, you know what? Because he already knows me. I already know him. So it's not like Matthew said, like, I can say something like, well, this is really stupid, and he's not going to take it personally, really, because he knows that I know that he's a great guy. He's really smart, all these things, right? So it's just having that trust that, you know, we're talking about the work product, not the person, if that makes sense. And it just like, you know, because a lot of times when you're dealing with people, it's also, you know, you have to be really, really clear what you're saying, what you're communicating. Because people tend to, you know, have the different mental models, and they may be, you know, you're saying something and they're envisioning something in their head that's totally different. And then they come back 2 weeks later and you're like, whoa, that was nothing like I said, you know. But I feel like since we know each other so well, that rarely ever happens. You know, we it's almost like we can sometimes almost finish each other's sentences when we're having conversation with each other. So I think that's a real asset. I think the challenge sometimes, though, when you're working with someone like a sibling, a brother, is recognizing that, and this has been a challenge for us, recognizing that the rest of the employees aren't going that fast. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it's again, because they don't have that history, right?
Yeah.
So to Matthew's point, like, I have no problem, and Matthew has no problem having, like, pretty candid argument about something, you know, and then 5 minutes later, like, we're just talking about something else, like nothing, right? So, but recognizing that, you know, like, in the environment, you got multiple people, and then they're like, what? You know what I mean? Like it kind of throws off half their day, if not the rest of their day. Like, I can't believe that just happened, you know? So just recognizing that and trying to work within the business like that has been, that's kind of, I don't want to say it's been a challenge, but it's been a process for me to learn that.
Yeah. Like, sorry, I thought I was talking with my brother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
So let's talk about, you know, Jason, let's talk about roles and responsibilities, because being, you know, having brother and you guys are, you know, dynamic people, you both are young. How did you guys decide, you know, Matt, you're in charge of this, Jason, I'm in charge of this, and here's where we overlap, or you stay off my turf on this? You know, like, how do you guys determine roles, responsibilities, and decision making?
So when we first started, we did everything. So there was no, like, it was like we all answered phones, we packed up things, we offloaded a container. Like, there was no, it was just like whatever needed to be done, we got done. But as we started getting bigger and we were able to delegate to people, I think the roles and responsibilities kind of, Matthew's really, really good on the sales side of things. He's really, really good at dealing with sales reps. He's really good at working with buyers. Really good at, to a certain extent, like executing a plan. And where my strength lies is more in like trying to figure out what that plan should be. But my strengths are not necessarily in executing the plan, right? So, like, I might be really, really in executing a plan for a day, 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, but then, like, my mind starts wandering, thinking about other things over here, where Matthew can sit down and say, okay, we're doing this thing, we're laying it out systematically, and now we're going to execute it with a, you know, a bunch of people. So I think that's kind of, like, the dynamic and, like, the role. So, like, I guess my job, if I could say it, is, like, probably trying to figure out where we need to go, and then Matthew's job is making sure we get there.
Would you agree with that, Matt?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. No, that sounds right. And I mean, it's accurate in the sense. I mean, we almost, his, you know, my weaknesses are definitely his strengths. You know, and I think we're fortunate in that fact that we complement each other very well. So, you know, to some extent, we just kind of like naturally gravitate. You know, as we started to delegate, we just sort of naturally gravitated to the things we enjoyed doing, and sort of let the other one do the other things. And then, like you said, as we got more sophisticated and we actually started naming positions within the company and we started delegating to an actual position, you know, it was almost already self-defined, right, just because of the stuff that we were doing. But yeah, I think it's very accurate.
So going back to the time where you guys were, you know, with Dad and welding a face mask in the garage, like, what... If he would have seen this, you know, vision, like, you know, carried out and such like that, like, I don't know anything about your father, but, you know, like, what do you think his vision of it, or was he just really focused on protecting his daughter? Do you think that he had this mastermind plan to create a business for his, you know, like, that you guys would take this and build it into this huge brand that this is?
I don't know if he ever thought it would get to this size. I think that he, again, like, being in the sport and, like, having, you know, our sister as his daughter and coaching, you know, all the way through, you know, she played from 8 years old all the way through high school. So, you know, he was in the sport just like we were in the sport. So I think he recognized the opportunity that was there. So yeah, I think he saw this as something that could become a sustainable business. I don't think that he quite, like 12, 13 years ago, if he thought like, you know, we'd have like this big distribution warehouse, we have this nice office, we'd have 20 some odd employees working. Like, I don't know if that was what he thought, but yeah, I'm sure he thought someone could definitely make a living out of this, is probably what he thought.
Right on, right on. So a few more questions that I have for you guys is, the difference of boys and girls. Like, once again, we're not going to talk about anatomy, so you people out there listening in on this show, we're not going to talk about that, like, go into details. But, like, you know, one of the things that we talked about before we hit record, you know, Jason, you were talking about raising the awareness of teamwork and sports, and you know, especially focused around females, right? Like, so talk to me about your vision and the pain points that you guys are addressing through this brand.
Yeah, so it was really interesting. So going back to when we first started talking about, you know, dropping baseball and just focusing on softball, one of the things that we did back then was we started having these, like Matthew was saying, these conversations with our customers. We would bring them into the office, we'd talk to them. And one day I just started, you know, I was just curious, so I started asking the question, you know, like, what were you like before you started playing softball? And almost unanimously, the girls would say stuff like, you know, I was really shy, I was a follower, I didn't have a lot of friends. And I said, well, what are you like now after you played? And they're like, oh, I'm a leader. You know, if there's something to get done, I know I can get it done. I've got a ton of friends. You know, so there was like this huge shift in like the way that they viewed themselves. And I was thinking like, wow, you know, this is like a really, really powerful, positive thing. So really one of the things we were trying to focus on as a brand is not just making equipment, you know, because I mean, at the end of the day, yeah, it's cool to make stuff that solves people's problems, but at the end of the day, it's just a helmet, it's just a face mask, it's just a bat or a bag or whatever. But what we're really interested in now is saying, you know, how do we raise awareness to, you know, all those parents out there who have daughters that team sports, and especially softball, is such a great activity for a young girl to play, to learn those, you know, those principles of hard work, working in a team, you know, what it's like to win, what it's like to lose, right? And how you handle yourself in those situations. I mean, I think we take for granted, at least, you know, being a guy, I think we take for granted how much sports influenced, like, me growing up, and, like, those principles of hard work that I have, and how they were instilled in, like, working hard on the football field or the baseball field or the basketball court. And I think we take for granted that, you know, there's such a huge population, especially females, that don't have that experience.
Yeah. Matt, what are your thoughts?
You know, I think it really came to light for me probably, well, a little less than 4 years ago, I became a father, right? I had a son, and, you know, of course you want to go out, you want to go buy him all the cool stuff, but, you know, I go out to shop for my son even to this day, you know, and when he was first born, I didn't see this, but, you know, every book was, you know, about being a hero or being a firefighter or a policeman, you know, these hero roles, right, is what everything sort of seems to be centered around for my son. And then my brother had a daughter almost about a year later, you know, and despite the fact that I never noticed it, you know, he would come and he would talk about when, you know, he goes to the bookstore to buy books for his daughter, they're about being a princess, and, you know, they're not hero roles that are being sort of written about for, you know, young girls, you know, and it's almost shocking, like, how oblivious you are to it until you see it. So, you know, I think just knowing that, you know, my niece sort of can be empowered with brands, you know, us and other companies that really, like, try to create opportunities for them to be more than the princess that's written in the book. That's exciting. So that's pretty motivating.
That's awesome. So I have a five-year-old daughter, right? And I feel this too. When she one day said, "Dad, let's have a costume party," and she wanted to be a Ninja Turtle, but there were no Ninja Turtle girls, but she decided to be Raphael anyways, and that was Michelangelo, but. You know, like, so she wanted to be a superhero. Now we wrestle, but she wants to be a princess who wrestles, right? So I love this, what you guys are doing about, and you know, empowering these young girls, boosting their confidence, their, you know, their self-esteem. You know, Jason, you have a daughter, and you guys are focused around serving females, which I think is incredible. What advice do you have, Jason, for your daughter, or my daughter, 5 years old, as they're growing up? So, you know, what advice do you have for them in terms of confidence and self-esteem, and, you know, because you guys are building a brand to really help ignite and lift them up as a, you know, as a person. What advice do you have for your daughter and my daughter?
You know, I'd say just try to do things like team sports, where you're injected into a team and you've got to learn to work together. Because I think a lot of times where people struggle is they don't effectively work with other people well. And when you're part of a team, like, you have to work together. You have to practice together. You have to learn to, you know, play as a team, or else you're going to lose. So I think that's like a really, really important thing that everyone should really have a really, you know, strong grasp of. How do I, because at the end of the day, most people, when they go out to get a job, when they go to, after they go to college or out of high school, whatever, you're going to be working in a team. Right, and how you perform individually is going to be based on that team, right? So if you're thinking like, well, how am I eventually going to get promoted, right? All of my success is going to be on how well the team performs and how well of an asset I am to the team, which means how well do I get along with the team? How well do I create value for the team? Just understanding that at an early age through team sports and realizing how that translates into, you know, life after sports, I think is really valuable.
That's awesome. So I guess a few more questions as we're wrapping this out. Do you guys have any raving fans or groups of female, you know, softball players out there who are raving fans that you want to give a shout out to? Any specific groups, colleges, high schools, or anything that's on top of your mind that you're like, let's give a shout out to these?
Yeah, so we have 260 VIP teams now throughout the country who help us co-create. You know, they're the ones who help us with product development. They sometimes will even go out to events and represent Rip It because they love what we stand for and they love how we, you know, are working towards making the softball community better. So I just say, you know, shout out to all the Rip It VIP teams out there. I mean, they really allow us to do the great things.
That's good. That's awesome. Who came up with this idea, this VIP Rip It, you know, team? That's a great idea. Essentially, they're ambassadors for you, helping you create and serve your audience. Like, how did you guys come up with that idea? I think it's brilliant.
You know, it just kind of evolved. I don't think we ever said, like, let's create a VIP program, but it was just like, okay, we really want to start co-creating with teams, and we started having some teams who kept working with us, and we said, okay, we've got this group. Maybe we should make it like a VIP group and, you know, create a kind of a different experience for this group. And it just kind of evolved into like this, it was very like decentralized, non-structured, and now it's turned into like this really structured program where, you know, we have 260 VIP teams and we add new VIP teams every so often, you know, because the more that we add, the better we can understand the softball community as a whole.
Well, and I think it's really cool, like, because at first it was just about co-creation. It was like, you know, we need to talk to players. Like, if we're going to understand what their pain points are, like, we need to have these groups that we can go out to and say, what's wrong with the softball pants you wear? And all of a sudden, like, we started talking to these players in this massive underserved market, and they wanted more, and they wanted more. Like, it was almost like, wait a minute, somebody cares? Like you actually care what I have to say? And they just kept, like, they wanted more from us, more from us, more from us. And it reached a point where we're like, man, like, this is like a really amazing group of people that just like have really bought into this mission and aligned with everything we're trying to do. And like, we should serve them better, you know? And again, it was like, okay, well, we're gonna make something out of this, or else these people are just gonna like come bang down the door because they want more from us. So that's sort of how it came about.
And I love the VIP teams because they are so brutally honest. Like, if we show them something is terrible, they're like, this is terrible. Don't make this. This is horrible. I hate this. Like, they are not afraid to tell us their actual opinion, which is what makes them so valuable, you know, yeah. Like, because it's really awesome when you have people who, you know, we've started to build enough trust where they feel okay telling us this is terrible, don't do that, you know, so it's pretty cool.
talk to me, maybe, you know, as we wrap this up, talk to me about one of these terrible, like this feedback. Like, give me an example of one of the feedback from a VIP member, and you guys just, like, you know, totally had no clue. And then you got this feedback, and you're like, oh, that, I guess that makes sense.
You have one?
Yeah. So when we decided to get into apparel and we decided to get into softball pants, right? And this gets back to, right, why a bunch of middle-aged men and women shouldn't be deciding what a 14-year-old girl wants, right? So we decided in our infinite wisdom that, softball pants were currently baseball pants shrunk down. And everywhere else in the world, girls don't wear pants like that. You know, they like yoga pants. So softball pants should be like yoga pants. They should fit like yoga pants. So that's where we started, right? And it was a very quick lesson learned when we showed up to our VIP teams and we were like, hey, look at these really awesome softball pants that fit like yoga pants. And like their immediate response was like, that's dumb. I want a softball pant, not a yoga pant. Like it was just like brutal honesty of like literally Jason Point, like this is one of the dumbest ideas I've ever seen. Like I'm playing softball, I'm not doing yoga. Like I'm not going to Starbucks. So it was great, right? But again, like also took us off a really bad path really early, right? Which is part of why that's so valuable. But yeah, it was wonderfully brutal honesty about a really, really bad idea.
That's great. So you guys are here, you're headquartered here in Orlando. You have sales reps and you guys are in retail stores all throughout United States and Canada. Where do you guys see the future of Rip It going?
I think we have the opportunity to become the softball lifestyle brand of choice. Right now, it's really fragmented in this industry, so there isn't any one single brand that's like the brand. You know, like if you think basketball, you probably think Nike. If you think football, you might think Under Armour. So there's not really that brand in softball. So I think, you know, over the next 3 to 5 years, you know, if we keep executing properly, we keep delivering value to our customers, you know, we have the opportunity to become that brand in the sport of softball.
Yeah, that's awesome. So guys, thank you, you know, Matt and Jason with Rip It. Thank you guys for coming on the show, on the Orlando Entrepreneur Show, and, you know, being founders here, building a business here, staying here and doing the incredible work and helping lift up, you know, females around the world and the softball players and doing what you guys are doing, protecting, you know, the beautiful faces out there and just the beautiful hearts and helping encourage these females. Just want to say I appreciate you guys coming on the show and just being so honest and transparent and for building some great things. We appreciate you.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having us on.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. And ladies and gentlemen out there listening in to this show, oh, I got to ask this. If people want to find you, get a hold of you, find out more about your company, your VIP, like, man, I almost totally missed that. How could people find out more about you guys?
The easiest way is just go to our website, ripit.com. So that's ripit.com.
Okay. And that's how they could get a hold of you, ask questions, find out more about your products, your services, all of the above?
Yep. Everything's all right. There.
Perfect. Okay. So we'll put that in the show notes. I almost missed that, ladies and gentlemen. But yeah, guys, thanks for listening into the Orlando Entrepreneur Show. This has been a fun conversation. I hope you've learned a lot. I hope you really value this. And go look for Rip It stuff in the retail stores to, you know, as a great product for softball players. So hope you guys have a wonderful day. Thank you for listening in, and we'll talk to you on the next show. Bye, everyone.
Thank you for listening in on today's episode. If you would like to be a guest on the show or start up a conversation with me, Josh, your host, send me an email to josh@orlandoentrepreneurs.org. You can also find out more information on Orlando's entrepreneurial ecosystem, discover resources to help you start and grow your business, and subscribe to future shows by visiting www.orlandoentrepreneurs.org.